This is Zone One Radio.
Zone One Radio.
I'm Zeph, Zone One Radio's illegitimate expat son, and this is the email from America. We've been having fun all summer. I took you to a film premiere, and then we went to a Civil War reenactment. On this episode, we are taking our car to the racetrack. So in a first ever paraphrased 80s pop reference, rev it up and start again. I said rev it up and rev it up, rev it up and rev it up, rev it up and start again. Oh dear, get that man a chair.
Reluctantly crouched at the start.
Now, I've always liked cars. Nothing particularly unique about that. Who amongst us had not at least once in our life got behind the wheel and given it the imaginary vroom vroom? I've done a weekend driving course, so okay, I'm a little bit more into it. I like watching Formula One, so that's me even further in. Oh, and I listen to London GP on Zone One Radio. Anyway, on this show, we are hanging with some guys for whom this is no passing fancy. These are real gearheads. Actually, no, that's an unfair turn of phrase. These are people who are professional about their passion, hardcore about their hobby. They really are drivers. We're off to a track day to find out what goes into taking your car, your street car, out on a racetrack. Now, track days happen at racetracks all over the world. Pretty much anyone with a valid driver's license, of course, can pay a fee and run their car out on the track following only the rules of the track rather than the law of the land. Let's be clear, though. This is not racing, just driving. But driving very, very fast. It's a hot Friday in the West Virginia countryside with a clear blue sky that looks like it stretches for 1,000 miles. And we're at the Summit Point Raceway for a monthly event simply called Fridays at the Track. So who goes to a track day? Meet Skip and Domingo, both professional men. Skip's an ex-Navy pilot. They're fellow gearheads who've paid the $250 fee to bring their cars to the track for the day. Domingo has a late model BMW, a 335, silver, four doors. And as I discover, pretty much no modifications whatsoever. This is how his car came, off the shelf, so to speak.
Are these your street tires?
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is you're driving this car to work and around town and to the store.
Yeah.
So what have you done to this car? We're looking at a 335i. Yeah. What have you done to it?
I have put race brake pads on it.
Okay.
So that it grips a lot better. And the other thing, they won't overheat.
Okay.
The street brake pads overheat. And
have you done any engine, exhaust, anything like that?
All I've done is put a better oil in it.
Okay.
Change the automatic transmission fluid to better stuff. I've only had it for 2 months.
This is a street car.
Right.
And you've taken it out on the track,
right,
and you've been pushing it to its limits.
Yeah.
And racing with, I saw there was a Ferrari. I don't know what number that was.
Yeah.
I saw there was a Ferrari in your group and everything. That's kind of cool, isn't it?
It is very
cool. This is your regular car.
That's
and you've
right.
just taken it out there. And how did you first get into this?
One of my best friends, who's not here, he was into it.
Okay.
And I was so jealous that he would tell me about all his adventures. And I had a minivan. I had nothing that I could come here for. And then one time I said, I'm going to get a small Miata, a used Miata, and go out there.
And that was it.
And then you get hooked.
Because how often do you come up?
4 to 6 times a year.
Yeah.
It's really a work-related.
Yeah.
When I can get off. I've made it as many as 6 times in a year.
Yeah.
And some of those are weekends, so it's like 3 days of racing. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Unlike Domingo, Skip has a Ford Mustang that he bought specifically for tracking. It's been updated under the hood as well as inside the cabin. Get ready for a couple of minutes of full-on techie talk.
Did you get it new?
No.
No?
96. I got it about
07 or 08.
And you got it specifically to track, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
So I bought it to track. In fact, a friend of mine helped put it together. So when I got it, it was a stock two-valve 4.6 liter V8 and 215 horsepower. And I drove it that way for a while. Well, some things that were, you know, added on. The suspension I completely redid using Maximum Motorsports parts. So got the brace here. I put in a two-core aluminum radiator to handle the heat. I put in H&R shocks.
Okay.
And caster camber plates, which you can see here. And I put in a K-member brace. H&R spring. I'm sorry, the shocks were Bilstein and the springs were H&R.
Okay.
And then I put in, safety loop for the drivetrain.
Okay.
Drive shaft. And then upgraded the brakes to Cobra brakes.
And again, because we were talking earlier, the street tires on the BMW right here, but you've got race tires.
Yeah, these are R compound Toyas.
Okay.
RA1s. And then the front brakes are upgraded. The back brakes are the stock brakes, except that they're modified. The bracket was modified so that it would accept a Cobra rotor.
And then inside the car, obviously.
Inside, what I did was.
You have a roll bar.
Yes, I do.
The cars don't have to have a roll bar, though, do they?
No, I can drive without it, but I got to thinking one time that I was doing 130 miles an hour, and I thought, you know, if I roll this thing, I'm not so sure this roof wouldn't flatten.
Can I sit in the seat for a minute and give the listeners a feel for what it's like to sit in a modified car?
Yep.
First thing I notice is obviously the seat. But everything else about the car, you upgraded to the race pedals.
Yep.
Talk to me a little bit about the clutch, because obviously the clutch is something which is going to be under far more duress.
Right, but it's a standard Cobra clutch.
Okay.
So, and then like I said, I modified the engine, so it's got performance improved heads, which gives it much more breathing. And then I put in some comp cams that are tuned to give you mid-range power and torque, because that's what you're needing, you know, in the turns, pulling yourself through the turns.
Took out the rear seat, obviously.
Yep.
And that's not for more room for groceries, right?
Did we lose you there? Well, don't worry. Nearly everyone starts with just a passing knowledge of what goes on under their hood. But the most important thing is to have a car with that hood. Drivers are grouped by ability, based on a ranking system kept on file at the track. The majority go out with an instructor in the passenger seat, who teaches, who evaluates. Rookies are in the 1 class, while Skip and Domingo are ranked as 2s. Instructors are all categorized as 3s, though that doesn't mean that they get to run solo all the time. They'll have other instructors sitting in with them on occasion, just to check that they're still following the rules of the road.
So let me ask you, what's the biggest difference then between Group 1 and Group 2? Group one is beginners.
Yes.
But is it pace? What are some of the differences? Yeah.
Well, the first of all is, in Group 1, you're going to have an instructor with you who's going to be real nervous because he doesn't know.
Okay.
So he's going to be, okay. And the thing that he says most often is, slow down.
Well,
if a guy's got a... It depends on the car you've got.
And there's so much to learn at the beginning. I mean, just so much.
He's
trying to show you the line, the breaking points, and the problems are coming so fast, it's hard to remember for the next lap where the breaking point was.
So if you think back, I mean, Group 1 is basically guys like me.
who all we've done is drive around town, right?
You just show up. Yeah.
Okay.
You just show up with
a
car.
In
the car, and you've got an instructor, and also the cars tend to be less prepared.
Okay.
Usually there won't be a race seat, there won't be harnesses, you probably won't have race brake pads, the tires won't be race rubber, which are grippier.
Over the course of the day, Skip and Domingo will get four different sessions on track, each a couple of hours apart. But before their first, all drivers attend a briefing. In the case of today's Group 2s, that's about 20 drivers. The meeting takes place in a classroom in a building trackside, desks, chairs, a whiteboard, and a big map of the track complex. And yet, thanks to the air conditioning, it's the only place at Summit Point where you can't hear the roars from the track outside. Motorsports Operations Director Chris White runs over the setup for the day, going over where the corner marshals will be, the instructors, and reminding everyone to behave themselves.
Watch for your corner order station. We have added a corner order station this year. That wasn't manned the previous year, but I felt it should be manned. The one here in the center of the carousel section is now manned. It was an awful long way to go from turn 5 to turn 9 without a corner order. Something going on at turn 9. So this guy is here now. I'll give you that extra warning just in case something's going on. Next year we may add another corner too. Passing. Ignore that. I have not updated the power plug yet. It is no longer passing anywhere with a point at the right end of the track. It is passing just like Group 1. From 10 to 1, from 2 to 3, and from 9 to 10. If you have a problem with that, see me after, and I'll give you the list of other groups that will allow it past the 8-hour point. Lead car, just like Group 1, you stay online, get off the gas, point clearly which side of the car should be passing you, and let them get by. Here's the criteria we use, and I tell you exactly what I tell my instructors. You have to verify this, because he's one of my guys. I use this criteria. Signing someone off solo. If I'm on the track, I should feel 100% comfortable driving around that track with you either right in front of or right behind you. That you're not going to create an issue for me when I'm driving out on that track and you are by yourself. So don't try to impress the instructor because you won't. And he's already scared, so don't try to scare him. Alright, please respect the guy. I'm sure a lot of you have heard about this. This is a bad incident we've had here. It's up to you guys driving that car to respect the person that's in that right seat. Listen to what they tell you. They are trying to share not only their knowledge, but their love for this sport. So listen to them. Pay attention to what they tell you. Their goal is not only for you to have fun, but to keep you safe so that you can take that car home in the exact same condition. A lot of times when you get solo, that's the last time you see an instructor in your car. Not anymore. I will have someone ride with you. I'll just pick someone at random and say, you're going to have an instructor for this session. They're just going to verify that you are still being safe and playing by our rules. Okay? The instructors in cars in Group 2 are going to be paying attention a little bit more closely. Okay? So play nice out there. Okay, Jason? Okay, guys, have fun out there. After the meeting, the drivers head back to their cars and suit up. Helmets are required, and nearly everyone has donned racing suits and gloves. Then, it's those famous words. Gentlemen, start your engines. Line up on the grid, and then are flagged out onto the track one at a time.
It's all done in an orderly fashion. It's more like planes at an airport rather than the screeching and smoking free-for-all of a Grand Prix. Remember, this is a track day, not a race day. I grab a second with one of the marshals, George Quinn, who's in charge of the starting grid and pit area.
Make a final call for if there's any accidents or anything. Try to decide what flags to use and get people rolling if we need it.
And obviously you're keeping the schedule, calling out the tannoy, keeping all the different groups on time, yeah?
Right, that's correct.
What's Fridays at the track? Is this a nice day? You get people coming down, different levels? Is this...
This is different levels of training. Groups 1A and 1B are usually beginners, so they go out with instructors learning how to control the car on the track, and then they can eventually pick up speed and go on from there. Group 2 is mostly solos. They've already been here a few times, and they can solo. They've passed the instructions that they need to get to it.
How many years have you worked here?
Here about 7 years, I think.
So do you see a lot of familiar faces every week in, week out, yeah?
Definitely.
So it's nice, isn't it? It's people coming in, and have you seen, you've probably noticed different people get older and move up through the classes or get different cars, right?
A bit like family. Just like me, we get older.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
There's screeching, squealing, and a little smoke once the session begins. Though staggered at the start, some cars do get close enough for passing, but it's all under controlled conditions. In a way, it's like driving on the motorway, everyone in their own space doing their own thing. It just happens that your space to do your thing is moving at 130 mile an hour, and at that speed, what you're doing in your space is everybody's business. Part of the driving rules are for cars to signal that they can be passed. The driver in front raises his hand out of the window and points to the side for the passing car to take. Or if he's slowing to return to the pits, by clenching his fist. There's definitely no indicating with lights at this speed. For Skip and Domingo, their first 20-minute session has literally flown by. As a Class 2, Domingo got to drive solo. But for this session, Skip was being evaluated. After a couple of approving words from the instructor, Skip and Domingo get ready for the next best thing after driving at high speed around the track. Talking about driving at high speed around the track.
So is there light after 60?
Yeah! Not as many women, but...
Here you go. As I said, you know,
get in with a red shirt.
Okay.
And get solo.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks,
Brad.
How was that?
Fun. Oh, it was awesome.
Yeah?
I don't know about him.
Yeah, he couldn't catch me.
He was eating so much dust, I don't know what he was doing. It was like, wow, I felt it so much grip. It was great.
Can you describe the session for me? The cars line up and then you go out there. What are those first couple of minutes like?
Well, they have a yellow flag.
Okay.
Which means no passing. People are generally going about two-thirds of the capacity, and they're getting the tires warmed up and the brakes warmed up. And actually, for some of us, our brains warmed up so that we're up to speed.
Because I was about to say, you guys got here like 3 hours ago, so, you know, you haven't been behind the car, and then you get back in the car again, and then, I mean, does the session go quickly? Because it's only 20 minutes out there.
Yeah, it goes really fast.
Really fast.
I usually look at the miles so that I lose track of time, then I think, oh, how much time do I have left? I'll look at the, oh, I only got 3 laps left, I better just focus.
And then when you come in, does it feel like, oh, wow, I could stay out here another 20 minutes? Does it feel that way? Or is it tiring? I mean, the concentration.
I think the concentration is tiring because in this, you're focused on hitting the same spots every time around the track. And so if I miss a spot, I'm angry with myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I missed that turn. And what happens is it follows you throughout.
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You got to get yourself back online. And
there is a time where it gets too long, but it's not 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I've done an hour, and an hour is
too long. An hour is too long.
But
I've
it is.
35 minutes, and then you're just wrung out.
But then, so when you're out there, it is about, this is my braking spot. This is where I'm entering the corner. This is where I'm leaving the corner. Oh, there's a car in my mirror.
But there's more than that. It's like on one,
is there, my braking spot's there. Oh, I broke too early because it just was too, I felt so fast. And so next time I got to hold on longer. And
yeah,
and
yeah, and your situation was different. I was testing out my brakes and I wasn't sure. They're brand new brakes and I was worried if they aren't cured properly, you get what's called green brake fade. And that means you're stepping on it. The hydraulics are working, but the pad is not biting into the rotor. And I thought I felt a little of that, and I was a little nervous. So I was braking way, I was backing off and braking rate way early. I'd hit about 125, 130, and then back off.
So what I'm saying, you're out there, you're hitting no speeds. You know, it's going anywhere from 60 to 130. Obviously, it's concentration.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is the whole day is enjoyment.
Yes,
but
yeah.
But when you're out there, is that even in your mind? Oh, this is great fun? Or is it like,
yes.
Non-
so yeah. I'm having fun.
You're
yeah.
right at the edge of having fun and being panicked. I hit turn four, the fastest I have ever done it. And at the end, you're going, oh, wow, that was really, really fast. And that's a lot of fun.
That is. And then you execute something, you know, I came into turn four and the guy in front of me braked right in the middle, and I'm going, holy crap, you know,
what?
Downshift, because it's not my downshift point, but I had to downshift to slow down and keep the revs up so I could get.
You guys been coming here many years.
Yeah.
Does it get more fun? Or is it obviously the first time you ever came, you were probably quite nervous and whatever.
The first time, I'm surprised I didn't wet myself.
I know, it was so much fun.
There's about 60 cars in total at Summit Point this particular Friday. BMWs, a Lotus, even a Ferrari, a red 930F. Streetcars of desire. Ooh, I'm rather fond of that turn of phrase. Let me say it again. Streetcars of desire. But this being America, it's American muscle, Mustangs, Corvettes, Camaros, that are everywhere. All the cars have their license plates on, though I did notice that one driver had put black tape over his. You drive to the track in what you'll drive on the track. Well, mostly. There are some bona fide race cars that have arrived on trailers, including a yellow Corvette in full race apparel, racing numbers, sponsors' names, netting instead of side windows. It belongs to instructor Stuart Fox.
It's a Corvette. It's a 99 C5R, full-blown Corvette race car. It was raced professionally, ran in the Rolex series, as you can see from the stickers on there.
Yeah.
It's kind of retired from the racing series now, but I was able to buy this last summer, so I'm just getting to know it.
Oh, okay.
But it's a lot of fun. I had a 84 Corvette prior to this and pretty much drove it to the limit of what it would do, and I, you know, just ready to move up and do more, and just twist of fate, it just got real fortunate when this became available, you know, right when I'm looking for something, and it was in a price range that I could actually, you know, come up with. So
try and describe for our listeners, you know, what are the major differences between driving this car, a fully blown race car, and even if someone owned a Porsche and was driving it around town, what are some of the differences in terms of these vehicles?
Looking at this car, I mean, the differences are drastic. One, it's got a lot of carbon fiber on it. It's got a full-blown race exhaust, so it doesn't have mufflers, so it's real loud. It's got special brakes on it. The suspension is all customized to handle, you know, race course duty. And
physically,
you look inside, it's got a full roll cage in case the thing were ever in an accident. One seat in it now. Let's see what else. Removable steering wheel. There's no creature comforts in there like air conditioning. You know, doesn't have any side windows. The front and back windows are Lexan.
So is it physically demanding? I'm talking about arms, shoulders, legs. I mean, you know.
So, you know, it's surprising. It's not. This car, getting into it, it's a lot of fun to drive. It's got tons of power and tons of grip, but it's actually very drivable. I was surprised. I was afraid when the first time I got in it that it would be a real handful and be all over the place and be taking me for a ride. But it's not. It was set up, you know, by people that had to race this thing. You know, this was endurance racing, not sprints. and the seat's comfortable, and just kind of everything. I'm getting used to the layout, and it's not bad.
Sessions are continuous, one group on track, one in a meeting, the other in the paddock checking fluids, tire pressures, and the pulse rate. But at some moment, everybody wants lunch. I grab a bowl of the track's famous 100-mile-per-hour chili. Hot, but not too hot. The last thing anyone needs going through the chicane at 100 mile an hour is a call from nature. And I sit down with Skip and Domingo. No surprise, all the talk is about driving, and true to stereotype, drivers, like pilots, talk with their hands, steering an imaginary wheel or showing what the car is doing.
What was the hardest thing to learn? What was the hardest thing look that up, you found?
Look far enough ahead, because everything moves slower and you don't realize it when you're looking further down the track. And I remember, because I have a video, unfortunately I can't do my video today because
battery's gone.
But I had was looking at one of my videos, and I was going through 10 at a pretty high speed. And I saw myself, and then I looked at my hands, and I saw my hands do this. And I realized I had just corrected for an oversteer, and I didn't even think about it.
It was automatic.
It was just automatic, because I was looking far enough in. I'm looking at track out for the turn. And I've had a couple of occasions where I hit something on the track or something, and of course this was the driving course that I took for my daughter when she was 16. I took to take it with car guys back when they had car guys, and it was really good. It's, you know, get you to look ahead, look where you want to go.
Not
the tree that you're that's coming up real
and
fast.
That's a hard one, but it's amazing.
But it's amazing once you go. If you keep your eyes up on the road. You know, I only have one rule. If my back end passes the 90, then it's both feet in. But once I get to the point where
I'm sideways on the road,
then I go both feet in.
Do you sometimes get caught just watching the car in front and following its line? Or is that...
At the beginning,
or do you teach yourself to sort of ignore? You want to know what they're doing, but you want to ignore what they're doing.
I think you do. You learn to do both.
Okay.
You know, the other thing you learn to do is one of the things that I learned to do. It was something like, you know, from flight training when I was in the Navy. Is you're going around, always around the track, you're asking yourself, how do I bail out of this if it goes bad? If it turns south, what do I do? Where am I going? And in particular, you usually don't find that thing. You don't have to think about that too much in the street. But, for instance, coming into turn one, say to yourself, if the brakes crap out on me, what do I do? Where am I going? You know, and there are some things you have to have pre-programmed in your head. You do not want to go into a gravel trap sideways.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing, there's a rabbit effect, which is really strong with me, where if I'm by myself and there's no one in front of me, I'm really following the rule. But there's someone in front of me that's a little bit faster.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you get a little, like, oh, I got to, you know, you want to catch up.
You want to chase
it. It's almost like a greyhound and a rabbit, and it really is real. And if you're managing it, it gets you faster without danger.
Yeah.
I found I can do much better when
somebody's out in front of me. And I'm trying to catch them.
Trying to catch them. They're not so fast you can't catch them. And also, particularly if they're the same model, there was another BMW, same model as my, same color, who was a little faster. So I'm going, well, what's he doing that I'm not doing?
So
how can I copy that?
Well, that's what I'm saying. So what's it like? Like, you know, you have to wave someone by. Is that like a 5-second thing where you're like, oh, I have to let... Do you know what I mean?
I don't mind. If the guy's got me, if he's beating me, that's fine.
Because you guys are not racing here. But what I'm saying is, do you sometimes find people get...
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
everybody does.
Okay.
I mean, like
what we call the red mist.
Oh, red mist. There's a word for it. Red mist. Where all of a sudden, you want to do stupid things. But now, I
don't feel it, but I don't... There's a little competitive edge.
Sure.
And that's in everybody here.
But I think
everybody knows how to manage it so that it makes you a better driver without making you dangerous.
As Motorsports Director, Chris White is the man in charge, not just today, but of all the instruction programs that take place at Summit Point. I asked Chris about some of the people that come to Fridays at the track and get the skinny on the art of instruction.
a Friday at the track, you can come in right off the street. As long as you have a valid driver's license, we'll put you in group one.
So that means you have to ride with an instructor.
You have to ride with an instructor. And the instructor, your day consists of getting your car teched, getting registered. The tech inspections, just make sure that no fluids are leaking from your car, that the ball joints are tight, the lug nuts are on properly, that the brake pads look the proper thickness, that type of thing. And make sure no loose objects are inside the car. Then you go to a classroom session that lasts anywhere from 40 to 45 minutes, depending on how many jokes I tell that day. And I cover the most basic and rudimentary things, the color of the flags and what they mean, the proper line through a turn, proper braking technique, all the basic, most rudimentary things, because 99% of instruction comes in the actual car with the instructor. So then you'll go and you'll get out on grid for your first session. Your first session, generally, the instructor will drive the car for the first couple of laps. And he's not driving the car at a great rate. He's just probably 50 or 60% of what we feel the car is capable of. There's no squealing tires. There's no brutal acceleration or anything like that. It's just driving you around to familiarize you with the layout of the track, the line we want you to take, and where you're allowed to pass.
So the instructor, you're talking, if I was sitting next to you in my car in my passenger seat, you'd be talking to me, pointing things out.
Right.
Okay.
Right. I would tell you, this is turn one. We're coming from the far left side of the track towards the inside and then feeding the car back out to the outside as we come through turn two. I would tell you on the second lap, I would add in, okay, as we come into turn two, this is a passing area, so we're checking our mirror. We're going to point anyone by who might be faster than us. When we point by, we'll let off the gas and allow the pass to happen and then get back to business. There's stuff like that.
And then obviously, it just as you become more competent, you just move up through the categories, right?
We have three levels at Friday at the Track. We have one, which is split into A and B.
Okay.
And generally when I'm making the list for A and B, I generally put people with none to very little track experience in 1A, and those with a little bit more track experience in 1B. Doesn't always work out that way, but that's generally what you try to do. On paper, 1A and 1B are exactly the same.
They're all on track at the same time.
1A and then 1B.
Oh, okay.
So they each have their own session.
Okay.
Group 2 is broken into two separate groups, 2I and 2 solo.
Okay.
So those are really the three different levels. Group 1, A and B. Group 2I being the second level, and solo being the third level. 2I and solo are on the track at the same time with each other.
That's what my friends were in, yeah.
Right. And those people, the 2I, they're no longer a novice. They're what we would say were our intermediate level drivers. Still have an instructor in the car, and we're maybe working on some more advanced things. Maybe a little bit of trail braking going into a corner, stuff like that. You know, a little bit more advanced level stuff. Maybe pushing that student a little bit more. And then 2 solo, really the qualification for 2 solo is if I am out on the track in my car and you are driving your car right behind me or right in front of me, would I feel comfortable?
Okay. Yeah, I heard you say that, yeah.
If I feel confident that you can drive around the track, not necessarily as fast as I can drive, but competently without causing any issues. You are aware of what's going on around you. You're able to get cars around you quickly. You're able to pass quickly. You see when a flag comes out. You know what to do when that flag comes out. Then, absolutely, I'm going to let you go by yourself.
If I showed up here to Summit Point Racetrack and I get out of my car and cars are whizzing by, there might be a part of me that's like, oh, yeah. Is there common rookie behavior? Some people just they're looking to go too fast, or what are some of the things that, again, the average driver, what sort of behavior does he tend to display when he first gets to Summit Point?
The answer to that is rather boring. The most common mistakes, whether it's in performance driving or accident avoidance, is not looking ahead.
Yeah.
That is the most common mistake that people make. They don't look far enough ahead, or they target fixate on the thing they want to avoid.
Yeah.
So in performance driving, since we cone the track for them, we cone an entry point, we cone an apex, and we cone an exit, they tend to focus. They look to the cone until they get there. If it's accident avoidance and they're trying to avoid a tree, it's the tree they look at. So that's the most common mistake is they don't focus ahead. They don't look where they want that.
It's quite counterintuitive, isn't it?
It's absolutely counterintuitive.
Yeah.
But as my wife can tell you, she's taken the accident avoidance course. She's done prior to the track. I've been behind her when she had a narrow escape on the street, and the first words out of her mouth when she got out of the car is, that looking where you want to go thing absolutely works.
Zone 1 Radio.
So always remember, look as far down the road you can. If you learn nothing else from this week's email from America, learn that one thing. No email this week. Those of you tuning in for 4 minutes of re-rambling away, I'm afraid you're disappointed. You're going to be disappointed during these summer specials because we are getting so much good stuff when we're out and about. We want to give that pride of place. Talking of good stuff and being out and about, thanks to Skip and Domingo for letting me hang out with them at Fridays at the track. Thanks to everyone else who was up there, drivers, instructors. You were very generous and very patient with your time as I wandered around sticking a microphone in your face. Thanks most of all to the director of motorsports, Chris White, for basically giving me a free pass to go everywhere. If you're ever in West Virginia, check out Summit Point. It really is terrific fun. Talking of cars, if you recognize this song, this is of course a version of Gary Numan's song, Cars. The original was 35 years ago, and it is the first in the new wave electro pop type thing. Absolutely making no sense right there. This version is by an Australian organ combo called Cooking with Three Burners. Very jaunty, I think. Talking of music, no thanks to Sam this week. I said, Sam, I need songs with just to do with cars. And she looked at me and she said, you're on your own there. So I'd done the music this week. And as you can tell, they all had something to do with cars. There is one more song to come. It's going to be Elvis Presley and Speedway, fittingly enough. I think that's about it. Check out all the other great shows on zone1radio.com. Follow me on Twitter, @ZephRadio. I think that's it. In the words of the U.S. Navy's Top Gun Training Squadron, have a bandit day.
Zone1Radio.com. Zone1Radio.